Daytime, outside a large, imposing country house with turreted towers and roofs. Climbing green plants grow up part of the green-stained wall. Inside, the page of a large illustrated book is turned.
When a gentle girl can win prayer from out the lips of sin, when a child gives up tears and the barren almond bears, when the silent chapel bell sounds the ghostly sinner's knell, then shall all the house be still and peace shall come to Canterville.
A train goes past. Patrick Stewart in title, The Canterville Ghost. Credits, Nev Campbell, Joan Sims, Donald Sinden, Sherry Lungi, Edward Wiley, Leslie Phillips, Daniel Betts. Music by Ernest Troost. Production designed by Peter Mullins. Director of Photography, Dennis Lewiston. Film editors, Paul Martin Smith, GBFE, Jim Oliver. Line producer, Malcolm Christopher. Produced by Robert Benedetti. Co-executive producer, Brent Shields. Executive producer, Richard Welsh. Written for the television by Robert Benedetti. Based on the short story by Oscar Wilde. Directed by Sid McCartney. A teenage girl sits on the train, writing.
Well, I guess you guys are just starting back to school after your summer vacation. And here I am in unjolly old England, cooped up with my mom and brothers on my way to some place nobody ever heard of. My dad came over early to start his research at the university. Mom says the grant he got is some big deal, the kind of thing that physicists get all excited about. But I don't see why he had to drag all of us along.
Ginny, don't look so grim. You know, living in another country can give you a whole new perspective.
If I don't die of boredom first.
An older woman and Ginny look at each other. A young boy sits with them, looking out of the window.
Canterville, next station. Next stop, Canterville.
Washington, wake up. We're here.
The train pulls into a wet, rural station.
Oh, I can see Dad.
Washington and the other boy run to the door.
Dad!
Hi.
Dad!
Hey, guys. Hi. Welcome to England. Sorry about this crazy weather. You know, we get four seasons in a day here, but this will blow over quickly.
Hi. Guys, how was the trip?
The plane was bumpy and Washington threw up in one of those little bags.
Adam, spare the details.
And how about London?
We went to Madame Tussauds and they had this scary part with Jack the Ripper and everybody.
We saw Hamlet in the West End.
Guys, this is Mr. Umney. Mr. and Mrs. Umney will be taking care of us. My family, my wife Lucia, my daughter Virginia, and these are my sons, Washington and Adam.
Hi, Mr. Umney. How do you do?
Help Mr. Umney with the baggage, guys.
Honey, we have people working for us?
You haven't seen anything yet. Come on. Ginny, you're gonna love this place.
I can hardly wait.
They walk to a waiting car.
Oh, this is for us. Ginny!
Ginny quickly gets in the passenger seat.
Uh-huh.
Come on, boys, climb in the back here.
Lucille and the dad, Hiram, sit cuddled up together in the back, and the car pulls away. They drive through the village where two ladies stand with a man who's trimming a hedge. Mr. Umney waves at them.
Ooh, that must be the new ones.
They drive on past the old stone houses. Two men wave to them.
Morning.
A woman watches them out of an upstairs window, which she quickly closes. Ginny sits in the front and looks at Mr. Umney with a frown. They drive along a country road, which cuts through fields and hills. They go along a tree-lined road. A man on a horse rides up to them and follows alongside.
Good morning!
Ginny watches him, but when he smiles, she looks away. The horse jumps over a fallen branch on the grass. The car follows the driveway around and pulls up outside the large country house. The boys stare out of their window. The car comes to a stop on the gravel driveway. Hiram opens the door and the boys clamber out first.
Welcome to Canterville Hall, home for the next 4 months. What do you think, Ginny?
It's old.
May I present Mrs. Omni?
I bid you welcome to Canterville Hall, sir, madam. Hi.
On the seats of the luggage.
And to the young mistress. Welcome.
The mistress? Ginny's mistress?
What are we? You are the young masters.
Masters?
We're masters?
Look out!
Excuse me. Boy!
The gloomy interior.
Terrific!
Someplace, huh? Guys, cut it out!
Ow! Give me my
guys, get over here!
After you've had a chance to get settled, we'll be serving an early supper.
These are the lords of Canterville Hall. That's Lord Henry. You'll meet him tomorrow when he comes down to sign the lease.
Look! Hiram!
I don't see how we can afford this. And the servants?
Well, it's dirt cheap. These aristocratic families are all going broke, and they have to rent these places out. And then there's the silly stories.
Stories? What kind of stories?
Nothing, really.
Ginny stands with her arms folded and looks up at a large, dated portrait of a man.
Hello?
Washington looks at a suit of armor in the hallway.
What was that? Oh, pay no attention to that.
Just the wind. These old places make a lot of noise. Come on.
Mrs. Umney directs them all up the large wooden staircase. Her smile fades once they've gone past, and she looks around. Ginny stares up at the portrait of a young, bearded, dark-haired man. A chandelier hangs above a long dinner table.
That was a wonderful meal, Mr. Umney. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. I'll tell Mrs. Omni.
Ginny, you hardly ate anything.
Oh, it's too cold to eat.
Well, there wasn't exactly central heating when this place was built, right, Mr. Omni?
Quite right, sir.
I'd better go see what those boys are doing.
They'll be fine. Let them play.
Ginny stands up.
You going to bed so soon, Ginny?
Yeah. Maybe I'll get warm there.
Good night, honey.
Good night.
Lucille and Hiram look at each other.
She just needs a little time.
I suppose.
Ginny walks through the hallway and stops to look up at the portrait again. The suit of armor beside her moves, putting its arm and lance forward and blocking her way. She walks around it and hurries past the boys on the staircase.
What a stupid trick, you guys. I could have broken my neck.
They shrug and carry on fighting. In the dining room.
Those two boys are whirling dervishes. No discipline.
Not to worry. They won't last the night.
Yes. The old boy was at it with the moaning as soon as they arrived.
Starved for attention he is. How long is it since the McKendricks?
Nearly 2 years. I hear the poor woman is still in the institution.
Well, good luck to her. That's all I say.
Mr. Omni drinks a large brandy. A grandfather clock chimes in the corner of a dark room. In the bedroom, Lucille sits on the bed in her pajamas and dressing gown, putting on socks.
What was that?
Probably just the Omnis closing up for the night.
Cheers.
They both drink. Adam and Washington have a pillow fight. They stop and look over at a closed door.
What is it? Maybe it's a ghost.
They slowly walk up to it together. They run back to their bed and hide under the covers. Ginny lies asleep on her side in bed. She opens her eyes, then closes them again. The closed door moves. Ginny briefly opens her eyes again.
All right, you two.
She gets up and goes to the end of the bed, where she pours water from a jug into a washing bowl. Ginny carefully carries the bowl over to the shaking door. She puts one hand on the door handle as it rattles, then pulls it open.
Here, Turks!
Ginny throws the water from the bowl, but the hallway's empty. She looks up and down it, then backs into her room and closes the door. Ginny listens. Daytime.
So, how did everyone sleep on their first night?
Adam and Washington look at each other.
Something wrong, guys?
They both stare at Hiram.
Didn't you hear it?
You heard it too?
It thumped on our door.
I thought it was you.
Well, there may have been some noise in the hall, but I'm sure that was just the Omnis closing up. Isn't that right, Mr. Omni?
Closing up? Who quite possibly is it?
There you see. Nothing to lose any sleep over.
Now, guys,
what do you say we check this place out?
Come on, I'll give you a $2 tour.
Hiram and the boys leave the room. Lucille smiles and turns to Ginny. She stands up.
Hey. It's a new place, okay? You'll get used to it.
What choice do I have?
Lucille pats her arm and walks away, leaving Ginny alone at the table. Hiram and the boys walk into a room, followed by Lucille.
The library is my favorite room.
Look at all these books! Wow! Look at this!
Be careful with that.
What a wonderful room.
Look, this book contains the whole history of the Cantervilles.
Wow!
Oh, look, someone must have spilled something here.
Looks like blood.
Oh.
Oh, gross.
Disgusting. Well, maybe you ought to try to get it up. Honey, you know in my carry-on bag,
I know. The miracle.
Right.
I'll go again.
Thanks, honey.
Lucy.
Mm-hmm?
You don't need to clean that. That's why we're paying Mrs. Omni.
You know what I'm like.
An expensive gray car motors quickly across the gravel drive and pulls up at the front of the house. Mr. and Mrs. Omni hurry out to meet it.
Morning, my lord.
Are they still here?
Yes, my lord.
Oh, Lord Canterville, those two boys are going to drive me mad, I swear.
Now, Mrs. Omni, we shall have to make allowances, things being what they are. Any trouble?
Only noises so far, my lord.
At least they've lasted the first night.
With deference, sir, Lord Canterville.
Hey, there. Gone.
A bright flash of light. Mrs. Omni collapses in a chair. Mr. Omni and Hiram go to her quickly.
That stain, Mrs. Otis, was the blood of Lady Eleanor de Canterville, who died on that very spot in 1584. It has been the wonder of the county for 400 years, and until today has resisted all efforts at removal.
Well, I didn't know it was so special.
Mrs. Omni, are you all right?
I suppose so.
Oh, Mrs. Omni, I'm so sorry.
Oh, Barclay. This bodes ill.
Mrs. Omni, we don't believe in such things.
You'll see. I have seen things with my own eyes. I have seen things happen in this house. May Providence watch over you.
Mrs. Omni walks away from Ginny.
This is Henry, Lord Canterville. Lord Canterville, my family. My wife, Lucille.
How do you do?
How do you do?
My daughter, Virginia.
Oh, Virginia, how do you do?
And these two rascals are my sons, Washington and Adam.
Pleased to meet you.
How did she die? That Lady Eleanor. Did somebody kill her?
No one knows. Her husband, my unfortunate ancestor, Simon de Canterville, disappeared mysteriously after her death. His body has never been recovered.
Wow!
But his spirit has haunted this hall ever since.
It was a ghost! Awesome!
All right, guys, that's enough. That's enough. Go outside and play. Okay. Say goodbye to Lord Canterville.
Goodbye, lads. Go on. Goodbye.
Lord Canterville, with all due respect, sir, the laws of physics are not going to be repealed even for the British aristocracy.
You may think anything you like, Mr. Otis. And you must remember that I warned you. Elise?
Thank you.
Hiram, before we sign anything, don't you think
we consider ourselves warned? We are happy, Lord Canterville, to be leasing the hall, ghost and all, until next June. Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Otis and Mrs. Otis and Virginia, of course.
Ginny, we're saying goodbye to Lord Canterville.
Oh, bye.
Goodbye. You must come to dinner with me one evening. Goodbye, all.
We'd be delighted.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Ginny watches them walk out, then lifts open the front cover of the large illustrated book. The first page is titled De Canterville an Istri, with a picture of an angel in a blue dress holding a red love heart in both hands. She looks up at an image in relief on the wall, also of a winged angel holding a heart. Ginny looks at it and frowns. She looks down at a red stone heart set into the cover of the book and runs her fingertips over it. Ginny walks over to the mantelpiece, looking up at the engraved angel. She runs her hand along the shelf.
So you've found the prophecy, have you?
Is that what it is? A prophecy about what?
I couldn't say for certain.
Is it about the ghost?
I don't involve myself in such things. Not like Mrs. Umney.
Mr. Umney lights a candle and walks away, leaving Ginny looking up at the angel. Lightning flashes outside the house. The family sit down to eat at the table.
Looks like this storm will last the night.
I wonder if he'll come again.
Now, Wash, like I've told you, there are no ghosts.
But Lord Canterville said...
The universe operates on certain fixed principles. Now, I admit we don't understand them all yet. And sometimes we call the things we don't understand supernatural. But eventually, there will be a natural explanation for everything. So, guys, up until then, put your faith in science, not superstition.
But we all heard it.
I know some of us say that we heard something, Jenny. And I also know that some of us would like nothing more than to turn this family around and go back home. That's not gonna happen, okay? So finish your supper and stop scaring your brothers. There are no ghosts.
Adam nods. Lightning flashes outside, and the grandfather clock chimes in the corner of the library. A flagstone floor leads to a closed door cloaked in shadow. Moving through the closed door and along a gloomy stone passageway. A jagged line of electric blue lightning flashes in the sky, moving slowly along the upstairs hallway and past a closed door. Bright white lightning flashes through the window at the end of the hall. Stopping and turning towards a closed door. Ginny sits at a desk, reading her letter.
Hey guys, help. I'm stuck in this grungy old house my dad rented for us. There's nothing to do and nobody for miles around except these two spooky old people who take care of the place. And on top of it, I think the place is haunted. At first I thought it was just my stupid brothers, but now I think maybe something is really going on. Of course, my dad, the brilliant physicist, refused to believe it could be a ghost and blamed it all on me, as usual.
Approaching behind Ginny, three candles flicker one by one. She looks up.
Washington Adam, You guys better cut this out.
A hand clamps her shoulder. A bearded man with long, receding hair in centuries-old clothes. Ginny looks up at him, then runs out of the room into the hallway and closes the door. A ghostly man walks straight through the closed door and looks down at Ginny. She backs away from him and trips over a step. Washington and Adam run out with pretend helmets, shields, and swords.
Have at you, sir, ghost!
He waves his arm. Fall over.
Big bully.
What's going on?
Guys, what are you doing?
It's him.
Who? What are you talking about?
He's right there.
Hiram looks straight past the ghost. Frowning, he holds up his candelabra and walks straight through him. The ghost looks from Hiram to Ginny and the boys. In a flash of lightning, he's gone. Ginny and the boys glance at each other. Hiram walks back to them.
There's no one there.
Oh, are you all right?
We're fine, Mrs. Umney. It's just a prank that got a little out of hand.
Oh, I wouldn't be so sure.
Let us not meddle, Mrs. Umney. Come along, my dear. Bid you bye.
Ginny, I don't want you scaring your little brothers anymore. Now, it was a good joke, but enough is enough.
But he was there.
Guys, I know you think you saw something, but it was probably just the lightning and your imagination with a lot of help from your sister.
How can you say that?
Virginia, I know you don't want to be here anymore. Well, I'm sorry. I can't do anything about that. But you are not going to make the rest of our lives miserable. Now, everybody get back to bed. And you guys put that stuff back in the kitchen tomorrow morning.
Hiram.
Lucy, come on.
We're sorry, Ginny. Honest.
It's okay, Mom. Let him think what he wants.
Lucille opens Ginny's bedroom door.
Maybe the wind blew something over or the lightning cast a shadow. You know, it's a strange place. Your eyes play tricks.
Yeah, that must have been it.
Come on, Lucy.
Things will be better in the morning. Night-night. Don't let the bed bugs bite.
Right.
Ginny sits on the bed and watches Lucille go.
Some bed bug.
Daytime. Mr. Umney picks up small branches from the gravel drive. Lucille walks up behind him.
Good morning.
Morning, madam.
Maybe the rain will help this poor thing. Doesn't show any buds.
It's been like that ever since. As long as anyone can remember, madam.
So why don't you take it out?
Lord Canterville's orders is not to be disturbed.
Odd.
Mr. Umney, I'm just going into town.
I'll get the car for you, sir.
No, that's all right. I'll drive myself.
No. No trouble at all, sir.
Honey, before you go, I'm worried about Ginny. Maybe she really did see something last night.
Oh, Lucy. It's just her way of getting back at us for taking her away from her friends. And the worst thing we could possibly do is let her think we could be frightened into going home. No telling what she'd do then.
Maybe. But the world has weird noises.
What noises? Just the power of suggestion. Don't let her suck you in. Remember, like I say,
everything has a rational explanation. Yeah, I know.
Good. Get her out. Make some friends. Meet the neighbors. She'll be fine, you'll see.
I hope you're right.
Inside.
Morning, miss.
Hi. Mrs. Umney, this is Sir Simon, isn't it?
Oh, why, yes. Fine figure of a man.
That look on his face. What do you think he's feeling?
Seems pretty fierce.
Yeah. But there's something else, too.
Well, now that you mention it, yes. Maybe a little sad, perhaps.
Lonely.
Yes. Perhaps so.
Ginny gazes up at the painting of Simon de Canterville, the ghost as a younger man. In the library, Adam runs up to the fireplace and takes a gun down from the mantelpiece. He looks at the floor.
Ah!
A red blood stain.
Mom!
What is it, boys?
Look! I saw it first!
Oh, no. I thought we had it up.
I think the ghost just got mad and killed somebody else and spilled the blood right here.
Honey, there isn't any ghost.
Well, somebody made it come back.
Well, we'll just have to clean it up again.
What is it?
It's nothing. Would you go get the cleaner?
Yes, Mom.
We may have to start keeping this room locked up.
Out in the countryside, the Canterville car pulls up outside a pub with a couple of bikes leaning against the wall. Hiram gets out and goes inside.
What? Back in the thing, with a third ferret, and he says...
What?
Everyone looks round at Hiram.
Hello.
I'm Hiram Otis. My family and I are renting Canterville Hall.
My, my.
And I was wondering if you could direct me to the post office, please.
That'll be here. I'm the postman.
Oh, thank you. And what about the local police station in case of emergency?
That'll be here, too. I'm the constable when one is needed.
As a constable, you're a better postman.
Telephone exchange?
Aye.
And what about a doctor?
Well, I'm the local vet, if that's any good.
Thank you. It's all very compact and convenient. I'll be back soon, I'm sure.
You can count on it.
The landlord and other men watch Hiram walk to the door. He opens it and stops to look back at them before stepping out.
Seems a nice enough sort, eh?
How long do you give up?
Well, they've already lasted much longer than most.
Well, I've got a fiver that says they're gone in a week at the outside.
Make it a tenner.
Fiver?
Put me down for 20.
20? The landlord writes it in a book. Ginny stands outside the gates of Canterville Hall with a painting of the house on an easel in front of her. She glances up at the building as she mixes paint on a palette. The young man on the horse rides up behind her. Ginny glances round, then carries on, painting the black gate. The man dismounts and walks up to her.
Hello.
Hello.
Mind if I look?
Suit yourself.
It's really very good.
No, it's just a sketch.
I'm Francis Stilton. How do you do?
Oh, Virginia Otis. We're renting Canterville Hall.
Yeah, I know.
No?
I saw you the day you arrived.
Oh, I don't remember.
Actually, the whole district is talking about you.
Really? What do they say?
Oh, they just wonder how long you'll be staying here in England.
Oh, well, we're just staying till June. You live around here?
I'm your nearest neighbor, the Cheshire Chase, just on the other side of the Pinewood. Are you enjoying your visit?
Not exactly.
Oh, I suppose you miss your friends.
Yeah, I do.
Your boyfriend especially.
Oh, well, I don't exactly have a boyfriend especially.
What a pity. I mean, I'm surprised. That's all about a beautiful girl like you.
Yeah, sure.
So, how do you like Canterville Hall?
Oh, well, let's just say it's peculiar. You ever been there?
You used to go there a lot. Years ago, when the Cantervilles were still here. I wonder if it's changed much.
Oh, well, why don't you come over and see for yourself?
I'd be delighted. How about tonight?
Sure. How about dinner? 7?
Right. See you then.
Okay.
Ginny smiles as Francis walks back to his horse.
I can't believe I did that.
Mr. Umney steers the Canterville car around the small, leafless tree in the middle of the gravel drive and parks at the front of the house. Hiram gets out.
I'm fine.
He goes inside, smiling and tucking some folded documents into his jacket. Lucille comes down the stairs.
Hi, honey.
Hi, Hiram.
How was town?
Well, the pub does everything but deliver babies, but though I didn't ask them about that. Everything okay here?
Yeah, it's fine. The boys have been out exploring, and Ginny went out painting.
Well, we got some time to ourselves. We can relax a bit.
Yeah.
Hey, I met a neighbor and invited him to dinner tonight, okay?
Sure.
That's great. I'll tell Mrs. Umney.
Thanks.
See? Told you she'd be fine.
Yeah, hi. You know that stain on the floor? It was there again this morning.
Really?
And it smelled a little like oil paint. But it's okay. I got it up again.
Well, maybe we better start keeping that door locked at night just in case.
Yeah, good idea.
They head upstairs together. Ginny walks into the library and puts her painting things down on a table. She stands in the middle of the room and looks over at the large old book. Ginny hesitates, then walks over to it and picks it up. She carries it over to the big gray stone fireplace and sits down with it. Ginny turns the page, revealing several lines of elegant red handwriting.
When a gentle girl can win prayer from out the lips of sin. When a child gives up tears and the barren almond bears. When the silent chapel bell sounds the ghostly sinner's knell, then shall all the house be still and peace shall come to Canterville.
She looks up at the wall.
They're the same.
Ginny stands up as she looks at the small images in the plaques on the wall. Then back at the book.
When a gentle girl can win prayer from out the lips of sin. When a child gives up tears and the barren almond bears. When the silent chapel bell sounds the ghostly sinner's knell. Then shall all the house be still and peace shall come to Canterville.
She feels the stone heart on the front of the book, and it comes off in her hand. Ginny looks from the red heart to the angel in the engraving, cradling a heart shape. Ginny puts the book down and looks around the room. She goes over to a high-backed wooden chair and moves it in front of the fireplace. She steps up onto it and puts the red heart into the heart shape on the engraving. A secret door in the bookshelf swings open. Ginny climbs down off the chair and walks over to it. Ginny steps under the thick cobwebs. She walks down a dark stone passage. Ginny stands at a closed door.
If this be error, and upon me proved, I never writ. No.
She pushes the wooden door, and a chain and padlock fall to the floor. The door slowly swings open, and Ginny looks in at Simon, who looks back at her.
Sorry, I was just looking.
He throws his arms up and the door slams shut. The secret door in the library starts to close as Ginny runs back through the passage. She gets out just in time and looks back at the closed door with a cobweb sticking out of it. A A convertible speeds across the gravel drive at dusk and parks outside the house. Francis gets out, and Mr. Umney opens the front door to him.
Evening, Umney.
Good evening, Your Grace.
It's been a long time.
Too long, Your Grace.
Listen, I'm not a duke.
Not a duke?
Just for this evening.
Very good, Your Grace.
Francis follows Mr. Umney.
Sir, madam.
Hello. I'm Virginia's mother.
Pleased to meet you, Mrs. Otis. I'm Francis Still, and this must be Mr. Otis.
Indeed. It's nice to meet you.
Very pleased to meet you.
And these are our two sons, Washington and Adam.
Hi.
Francis Still.
Hello.
You too.
Ginny joins them in a dress.
And, I guess you've already met our daughter, Virginia.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Madam, dinner will be served almost at once. Your Grace?
Umney.
He called you Your Grace.
Well, yes, technically that's what I am.
A lord?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm the fourth Duke of Cheshire.
Really?
You don't look that old.
Well, you see, my parents died in an accident when I was very young, and I inherited.
I'm so sorry.
So what do we call you then? Your Grace?
Oh, please, just call me Francis. or whatever you like.
Madam, Mrs. Umney informs me that dinner will be served immediately.
Thank you.
Good. Well, let's not stand on ceremony. Let's sit down and eat.
Boys?
Francis gestures for Ginny to go first as they make their way to their seats. Outside, a full moon shines behind some treetops.
So, Francis, you must know this place pretty well.
Well, I haven't been here since the Cantabers left, but it hasn't changed at all.
You know about the ghost, too?
Adam?
Oh, that's all right. No, in fact, I do know about the ghosts. I mean, everyone around here does.
Well, we take it with a rather large grain of salt.
Except those of us who've seen him.
Yeah.
Come on, we don't want to bore Francis.
Not at all, no. In fact, I've seen him, too.
Really? Well, I suppose every place has its superstitions, its mass hallucinations.
And the bloodstain? You've seen that?
Well, years ago, I saw it, yes.
Well, it's gone now.
It's gone. But no one's ever been able to remove that.
Mom cleaned it up with stain remover.
It came back once, but we got it this time. Yeah, come on, Sean.
Guys.
Hang on a minute. Guys.
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, I'd like to see it.
Good. Come on.
They all follow the boys down the hall.
We've been keeping this door locked in case anyone wanted to tamper with the stain again.
Hiram unlocks the door, and they all go through it.
Now it's green!
I know the door was locked.
Hiram touches the stains and smells his finger.
Oil paint, all right. And I guess we all know where that came from.
What? Not now, Hiram.
I don't know how you managed to get in here, young lady, but this is in very poor taste.
Dad, let's discuss this later. Francis, I know you have to get home.
Yes, of course. I ought to be getting back. Thank you for a wonderful meal.
Your coat.
Yes, thank you.
Go say goodbye.
Ginny turns away.
Bed in 10 minutes.
Do you think Ginny did it?
No way. It was him, all right. Green blood. He's making fun of us.
Yeah.
Well, he won't get away with it this time. Because I've got an idea.
Yeah.
Outside.
What was all that about?
Francis, have you really seen the ghost, or were you just saying that to defend me?
No, I really saw him. It was about 6 years ago. We were visiting and playing croquet on the lawn. Just after sunset, he appeared right there, by that tree, playing ninepins with his own bones. My aunt fainted dead away.
Well, the ghost has been doing stuff like that to us, too. But my dad's a big-shot scientist who can't bring himself to think it's a ghost, so he blames it all on me.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, thanks.
What are you gonna do?
I don't know, but I'm gonna do something.
Be careful.
I will.
Virginia?
Francis gets into his car.
How about tomorrow?
I think I can find the time.
Francis smiles, puts the car in gear, and drives away. Ginny watches him. She looks over at the leafless tree.
And the barren almond bears.
Ginny watches as the raven lands in its branches. Then she turns and heads inside. The raven flies through a barred window and joins Simon.
Ah, Gabriel, do they retire to their beds? Splendid. Before another dawn, we shall bid farewell to these Americans. I was beset by two upstart boys, denigrated by a little snip of a girl, and indignity upon indignity, ignored by their parents. Well, I will tonight a special effort make. First, will I to the parents' room, there to lay a clammy hand upon the woman's brow, while I whisper in her trembling husband's ear the awful secrets of the charnel house. Then to the boys, where I will gibber and stab myself thrice in the throat. Then turn I to the girl. For her, I will do such things. What they are yet, I know not, but they shall be the terrors of the earth. The bell invites me.
Simon sits on a stone bed.
Gabriel, thou hast the storm forgot. Blow winds, crack your cheeks.
Lightning flashes.
Thanks, my trusty familiar. Now to work. Perchance, a grand entrance.
He disappears and reappears in the upstairs hallway. Simon stares at a hooded figure with yellow eyes at the far end of the hall.
A thousand pardons.
The figure doesn't move.
Pray, proceed.
Simon reappears back in the stone cell.
A ghost. Another ghost. And such a one. It rose like a colossus, and in its hand an Ethiop's dagger. And from its eyes there streamed demonic light. Gabriel, think you we could somehow manage that ourselves? It had a most chilling effect. And now, methinks, we might turn this appearance to our advantage. If you would join with us against these Americans, surely as a fellow ghost, he would feel some kinship. Blood is thicker than water, although to us that is not entirely apt. I'll after and appeal to his ghostly honor. There is yet time before dawn.
The yellow-eyed, hooded figure stands in the hallway as Simon returns.
Hail and well met, Sir Ghost. I bid you a hearty welcome to Canterville Hall. I am Sir Simon de Canterville, the resident spectre. But setting all chat aside, wouldst join with me in an alliance, ghost to ghost?
Simon spots a handwritten sign around its neck and uncovers it.
Heotis ghost, true and original, beware of imitations.
He steps up and pulls off its white face mask cut out of card. A string and a pulley system makes the ghost's arm move. The string leads up, then down, then under a bedroom door. Adam and Washington sit on the floor at the end of the bed. Washington pulls the string.
Duped. Mocked. Ridiculed.
Simon bursts in. The boys stand up. Simon holds out his hand, and they stumble onto a seat in the hall.
Now, by the bones of my ancestors, I swear, when twice the cock hath called the sun, deeds of blood shall be done upon your heads. yet crow again and cry havoc. Murder shall walk abroad. Yet crow again and cry havoc.
The boys run in.
Perdition take the naughty fowl. I've seen the day when with my good strong spear I'd have made him call for me and twere in death. Take thou this!
Ginny grabs the boys as Simon destroys the fake ghost and it falls to the floor in a shower of sparks.
Hey, that could have been us. Come on, let's see what a big brave ghost can do to a girl and two little boys. I dare you.
Why must I be afflicted by these Americans?
Simon fades away.
What on earth is going on? What is this?
Are you all right?
We're okay.
This is the last straw, young lady.
What?
Somebody could have been hurt.
Oh, you could have burned the place down.
That's enough. Okay. You win. As soon as I can arrange it, you are going back to Indiana to live with your Aunt Lydia.
Dad.
Hope you're happy now.
Mom.
Ginny, I think your father's right this time.
They walk away, and Ginny turns to the boys.
We didn't mean to do anything wrong, Ginny.
We were just trying to give him a dose of his own medicine.
Adam and Washington run to their room, leaving Ginny alone in the hallway.
Well, Sir Simon, I hope you're satisfied.
Daytime outside Canterville Hall. A narrow country road stretches away towards the hills. Ginny and Francis ride horses hard across a green field. A small deer looks up from its grazing. Ginny rides a white horse in the lead, with Francis following behind on a chestnut brown horse. They slow down amongst some trees.
Virginia, you're riding like the devil's after you.
Maybe he is.
I know a place we can talk.
Francis jumps down and helps Ginny off her horse, a statue of an angel.
I used to come here when I was little. It's my favorite place.
They look at the statue, surrounded by a ring of dried leaves.
It's like I've been here before.
What's wrong?
My parents are going to send me home.
Oh. Why?
My brothers got the ghost mad this morning and he really let loose. And my dad thinks I was trying to blow the place up. He thinks I've been trying to scare the family into going home, but...
But what?
Ginny walks over to a stone bench and sits down.
But now I don't want to leave.
Francis sits beside her.
I mean, it's weird, because at first I hated coming here. But now, now I feel I belong.
Ginny and Francis look at each other. He takes her hand.
I feel that too.
Ginny looks down, then back at Francis. He moves his hand away.
Maybe there's some way to convince your parents. I mean, maybe they'll see the ghost for themselves.
No. Neither of them can see him. I mean, he was standing right in the middle of the hall and my dad walked straight through him.
You know, they say they're not to see ghosts. You have to believe in them.
But everyone around here can see him without any trouble.
No, we grew up with ghosts. I mean, our history is full of them.
So it's a catch-22 then. My parents don't believe because they can't see him, and they can't see him because they don't believe.
I'm afraid so.
But if they did believe, then they could see him. That's it. Wish me luck, Francis.
Virginia.
Francis touches the spot on his cheek that she kissed. In the library, Ginny puts the chair back in front of the fireplace and climbs up onto it. She presses the red heart in the angel engraving, and the secret door swings open. Ginny ducks under the cobwebs and walks along the dark stone passage to the wooden door.
I really have to talk to you.
No, you have no right here.
And you have no right to ruin my life.
What?
All that moaning and rattling and thumping, my dad blames me for all that. And you've used an awful lot of my good oil paints for that dumb blood stain of yours, and of course he blames me for that too, and that blast this morning, scaring my brothers half to death. That really tore it. And now... Just when I meet someone I really like and I want to stay, my dad is sending me home. And he's sending me home on account of you.
But I knew not. I must rattle my chains and groan through keyholes and walk abroad at night. I have no choice.
Why not?
That concerns you not.
It does, when you're ruining my life. Sir Simon, you have to help me. You have to make him believe.
What?
He doesn't believe in ghosts.
Doesn't believe.
Simon stares at her.
He has ignored me quite. In 4 centuries of haunting, I have never been treated so. Your father did, without a care, amble through my person.
Well, that's because he couldn't see you. Francis says that because he doesn't believe in you, he can't see you.
Gabriel, that would explain it. I was afeard that I was losing my powers.
Oh, no, I thought you were wonderful.
It's her?
Yes. Well, I don't usually scream. I mean, roller coasters and scary movies, not a peep, but when you came in that first time, well, you heard me.
A most gratifying scream.
Anyways, if we can make him see you, then he'll have to believe.
Zones. Bring a disbeliever to belief. A cynic into faith. That would test my mettle. But how?
I know just the thing. I'll introduce you to him as a ghost he already believes in. Then he'll see you without any trouble.
Is there such a ghost?
Yes. We saw a performance of Hamlet once in London, and everybody loved the ghost of Hamlet's father. Partly because he came in early while everyone was still awake, but you'd be great in that part.
Thou speaks wiser than thou knowest. I gave Will my thoughts on that role when he did visit here in 1599.
You knew Shakespeare?
I did. And save for my familiar Gabriel, his words have been my only companions for 400 years. Thou knowest how Hamlet's father must be confined by day and walk abroad at night. Where dost thou think Will Shakespeare gottest that?
From you?
In me, you see, the genius, the original. You might almost say the part was writ for me.
I knew you'd be terrific.
You must play Prince Hamlet. We will perform it in the banqueting hall. Gabriel will provide the stage effects. And you must wear a cloak.
He puts it round her.
Just my size.
For myself, my armor will well suit, which last I wore before the Virgin Queen at Kenilworth.
Simon stands with his head slightly bowed.
Until tomorrow night.
Ginny turns and leaves. Simon stares ahead, a faint frown between his eyebrows.
Oh, Gabriel. I scarcely dare to think it. Might it be she at last? It is too much to hope. And yet she is, alas, unparalleled.
In the hall.
And then Hamlet says, oh my, what?
Prophetic soul.
Oh my prophetic soul. Okay, good, I think I've got it.
I hope this works.
Yeah, you and me both. What's that over there?
It's the old chapel. It's one of the required sites of the district. Would you like to see it?
Sure.
They walk through the graveyard at dusk.
This is the Canterville family plot. It goes all the way back through the centuries.
Are Sir Simon and Lady Eleanor here?
No, I don't know if anyone knows where they are. When I was little, I used to climb right to the top of the bell tower. The bell's cracked, so it doesn't ring, but...
The silent chapel bell.
Sorry.
Look, the moon is rising.
It's a blue moon.
Look.
Second full moon of the month. It's supposed to make people fall in love.
Let's look inside.
They go into the candlelit chapel.
This is wonderful.
The figures of a man and woman in the stained glass window.
It's like time stands still here.
Ginny turns to Francis and they kiss. They move their faces apart, partly in shadow.
Ginny, it's as if I've known you all my life.
I feel that too. But I'm scared.
Why?
Well, let's face it, sooner or later I'll be going home to Indiana.
But nothing could come between us. Not if we're really meant for each other.
You seem so sure.
I am.
Ginny looks up at him.
Think?
She looks down.
Well, I've never felt this way before, Miss. Hard to be sure.
And what if we're wrong?
But we must at least give it a chance. Don't you feel that?
I don't know. I don't know.
I see. Sorry. So sorry.
Francis walks away out of the chapel. Ginny turns round, and Simon wipes her tear away with his finger.
Why do you season this, your love, with so much salt water?
Oh, Sir Simon, love. I've never felt this before. I don't know what to do.
Ginny rests her head on Simon's chest. He closes his eyes for a moment, then holds her head and gently moves her away.
You fear the thrill that seized your heart when you did kiss that boy.
It is awfully scary.
Love it is. And not to be denied. And it can bring you joy untold. But if we are weak, if we succumb to fear or green-eyed jealousy, then it can wreak a terrible devastation on our soul. I know whereof I speak.
Ginny watches as Simon turns and walks away. He stops and partially looks back.
But never to have loved. More sad is still to have loved and let it slip away. It's never to have lived at all. And love, and come what sorrow may, it cannot countervail the bliss that one sweet minute gives you in his sight. Come, go you to this boy, and let love guide you.
Oh, Sir Simon, thank you. Thank you.
Ginny hurries out of the church. Simon walks up the steps watching as she runs through the cemetery and catches up with Francis on the lawn. Simon puts his fingers to his cheek where Ginny kissed him.
Lady, you have bereft me of all words.
He gently blows his fingers. Outside, Ginny and Francis kiss in the fading light, wrapping their arms round each other. They walk across the lawn towards the large silhouetted house together. The full moon sits brightly in the sky. In the banquet hall.
All right, I think we're set.
Do you have everything?
Yeah, my costumes and things are up there. Are you two ready? Good. Come on, everybody, showtime!
Virginia, remember, it's prophetic soul.
Prophetic soul.
Good luck. This way, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. and Mrs. Omni, would you please take your seats here?
Your grace.
Everybody sits down.
Now, the performance will take place from the gallery.
Now, listen. He's a little nervous, so don't make any rude noises or pull any practical jokes, okay? Promise?
Wouldn't dare.
Good. Now, remember, at the beginning of the play, Hamlet's father has died, and his uncle has married his mother. Now, in this scene, Hamlet meets the ghost of his father, who tells him that he was actually murdered by the uncle. I'll be Hamlet, and we have a special guest star playing the ghost.
Hey, wait till all the kids at school hear we had a real ghost playing a ghost for us. This is wild.
You know, one rarely gets the chance to see Shakespeare performed by somebody who actually knew him.
A white mist rises up over the rail. Lightning flashes around the room. Adam watches open-mouthed. Mrs. Umney stares rigidly. The white mist spills down over the top of the rail. Above it, Simon steps out.
Hiram, look!
Hiram watches.
Whither wilt thou lead me? Speak, I go no further.
Mark me!
I will.
My hour is almost come, when I to sulphurous and tormenting flames must render up myself.
Alas, poor ghost.
Pity me not, but lend thy serious hearing to what I shall unfold.
Speak, I am bound to hear.
I am thy father's spirit, doomed for a certain term to walk the night, and for the day, confined to fast in fires, till the foul crimes done in my days of nature are burnt and purged away.
Wow! Double wow!
List. List. Oh, list. If ever thou didst thy dear father love, revenge his foul and most unnatural murder.
Murder?
Murder, most foul, as in the best it is. But this most foul, strange and unnatural.
Haste me to know it.
Know then, thou noble youth, the serpent that did sting thy father's life now wears his crown.
Oh, my prophetic soul. My uncle?
Aye, that incestuous, that adulterous beast, won to his lust the will of my most seeming virtuous queen. Oh, Hamlet, what a falling off was there from me whose love...
Simon stops with his hand to his chest.
Whose love was of that dignity, that it went hand in hand even with the vow I made to her in marriage.
Sir Simon, what is it?
I'm sorry, I can't. Forgive me.
He turns to the audience, who look up at him, waiting.
Forgive me.
Simon fades away. Hiram watches without surprise. Ginny stands alone in the gallery and looks down at the audience. Adam starts the clapping and the others join in. Lucille, Mrs. Umney, and Hiram stand up.
Wonderful, Your Grace.
That was rad!
Yeah.
Would you please congratulate Miss Virginia on her outstanding performance.
Gave me the chills, I can tell you.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
If you'll excuse us. Your Grace.
Here she comes.
That was awesome, Ginny.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was wonderful.
Ginny, really, I don't know what to say.
Oh, that's okay, Dad.
No, really. I don't know how you and your friend did it, but it was quite an illusion.
Hiram, you just
I'll figure it out eventually, but it was a first-rate effect.
Effect?
Of course. I'm just amazed you went to such trouble for a practical joke. Well, it's late. We better turn in. Good night, Francis. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hiram puts his arm around Lucille, and they walk off.
I'm sorry. Your father just seems to refuse to believe.
Yeah. I'm more worried about Sir Simon.
May I see you tomorrow?
Yes.
Good night.
Francis turns and walks away. Jenny stands with her head slightly to one side. She looks up.
I'm sorry. Forgive me.
In the bedroom.
I don't know why you give her such a hard time.
Look, Lucy, I know there's an explanation for all of this. I just haven't figured it out yet.
Hi. The explanation is simple. The house is haunted.
You really believe that?
Yes, I do. Sir Simon is a ghost. And as far as Ginny is concerned, you've acted like a complete idiot.
Lucille sits up.
For the past couple of years, you two have been at each other. You used to be so close.
I admit I'm having a problem dealing with her, okay? I don't know. She used to sit with me, she used to talk to me, and now she's growing up. Most of the time, I have no idea what she's feeling, what she's thinking.
Honey, most of the time, she doesn't know herself. She's a teenager. It's tough.
I suppose. But there's one thing that hasn't changed, Luce. There are still no ghosts.
You take the cake.
Where are you going?
I'm going to check on our daughter, see if she's all right.
Lucille opens the door to Ginny's room.
Ginny.
Let her sleep. Promise I'll speak to her in the morning. Come on.
They go out again. The shape under Ginny's bed covers is made from cushions. Ginny walks down the secret passage with candles. She stops at the door.
Sir Simon?
She pushes it open and looks into the dark, bare stone room. Simon sits with his hand to his chin, staring down. Ginny walks towards him and stands in front of him.
Sir Simon, what's wrong? Why did you stop like that?
I've read that speech so often. But just now, the meaning struck me as never before. Oh, Virginia. If I were to tell you the secrets of my prison house, you would hate me as I hate myself.
Nothing can make me hate you.
Simon looks up at her sharply. Ginny puts her candelabra down. She sits down next to Simon.
You could tell me anything.
Simon sits back. Ginny watches him.
Would you wish to know how I became a ghost?
Well, the book said that you were suspected of killing your wife, but I didn't believe it.
It's true.
It is?
For years, our lives were sweet and full. And then the green-eyed monster in my mind, it sowed his seed, which, like a canker, shriveled up my love. There was a man who I believed a friend. A friend I took for truth. What he told me, that like Hamlet's mother, my wife had been unfaithful to me. I fell into a jealous rage. I locked her in the house. I forbade to her all company. I berated her constantly. Her very denials inflamed my madness. I drove her to such despair that, at length, I dragged her into madness, too. And one terrible night, there by that fireplace, she took my dagger and she killed herself. And she died in my arms. My tears mingled with her blood. You see, that stain is ours.
Oh, Sir Simon.
I buried her secretly in a place that she loved best in the world. And I put an angel there to guard.
The garden?
been there. Francis took me.
And soon, I learned that she was innocent. My friend had lied. He had wanted her for himself. She loved me. She was loyal. And every day, every moment since then, I miss her. And that is why I could not bear to see you lose your love.
And how did you die then?
I summoned her family here to the house, and I confessed to them my crimes, and I bid them do with me whatever they wished. And her brothers brought me here to this cell. They chained me to the wall. And here I starved, a lingering death.
How horrible.
I would die a thousand deaths if I could undo what I've done. But there was more. They brought a witch who conjured a spell that, like Hamlet's father, I was doomed to walk the night and for the day confined, here to brood on my sins. But most of all, remembering her.
And when do you sleep?
I am forbid to close my eyes. By day I'm here. By night I haunt. It is ordained. I have not slept for over 400 years, and in truth, I'm so very, very tired.
Ginny stares at Simon for a moment. She turns and picks up a cloak, which she puts around his shoulders. Ginny kneels down and looks up at Simon.
Poor, poor Sir Simon. Isn't there any place that you can sleep?
Oh, yes, that peaceful garden. The Angel of Death could take me there, to lie in the soft brown earth, listening to the silence, forgiving life. Peace beside my Alamo.
And can that happen?
Yes. Thou canst make it so.
How?
There is a prophecy.
I've read it. But I don't know what it means.
I'll show you. Come, here.
Simon puts his arm around her, and they disappear. To reappear in the library, he picks up the book.
Here now. Read aloud.
When a gentle girl can win prayer from out the lips of sin, when a child gives up her tears, am I a gentle girl?
Oh, yes, thou art, and still so young to be called a child.
What do I have to do?
You have wept for my sins, for I have no tears left. Next, you must pray for me, because I had no faith in love. And then, if you would go with me into the realm of darkness, there to stand before the Angel of Death and speak for me, the angel will have mercy on me.
Then shall all the house be still, and peace shall come to Canterville. To you.
Oh, yes.
What is it like in the realm of darkness?
Lightning flashes.
I tremble even to think of it. There is mist, and fearful shapes do lurk in it, imprisoned in the voiceless winds, blown with restless violence. And evil voices whisper in your ear. But if you hold steadfast to your belief and show no fear, they cannot hurt you. Against the purity of faith, the powers of darkness cannot prevail.
I'm not afraid. I'll go with you and tell the angel. that you are a good and kind ghost who gave me the courage to follow my heart.
Simon goes down on one knee.
Now you, my lady, and as a true knight should, I pledge my soul to your safety and happiness forever.
He kisses her hand and looks away.
On that spot did I forfeit my soul.
Ginny holds his hand in hers. She looks up.
This is Virginia Otis, praying for this poor old ghost, Sir Simon de Canterville, who is very sorry for what he has done. He can't undo it, but he has spent dozens of lifetimes paying for it. You need to forgive him, because he can't forgive himself. Please.
Ginny looks down at Simon, who still kneels in front of her. He looks to the floor, and Ginny follows his gaze. The red blood stain slowly fades away.
You have been heard.
I'm ready now.
Lightning flashes, and Simon stands up. The hands on the grandfather clock strike midnight, and the candles go out.
Remember, show no fear. Hold fast to your faith. I could not bear the weight of two loves lost.
I'll be fine.
Ginny smiles at Simon as lightning flashes around them. He takes her hand, and they both face forward. Stone doors open.
Only pass through while the clock chimes.
Ginny looks round at the clock, then faces forward again. Together they lift their joined hands as the fireplace opens up in front of them, split down the middle. Beyond it, a single white light shines in the mist and darkness. Together they step through as lightning flashes and wind blows around them. The stone fireplace slides shut again as their silhouetted figures walk away. Subsides and the library falls silent again. Daytime in Ginny's bedroom.
Ginny? Pumpkin? It's me.
The old man.
Look, I know I've been unreasonable about this whole business, and I'm sorry. I'm gonna try harder to maybe see things more your way. So, please forgive me for being so insensitive. Jinjin?
Hiram shakes her, then pulls the cover back, revealing the cushions.
Lucille?
Has anyone seen Ginny? She's not in her room.
She must have gotten up early.
No, her bed hasn't been slept in. All right, let's spread out and search. Mr. Romney, you know the grounds better than anyone.
The grounds? Yes.
I'll go with Mr. Romney. I'll search down here with Mrs. Romney.
I'll go upstairs.
I'll go with you.
Let's meet back in the library.
Outside.
Oh, come on, Mr. Romney.
Your Grace, the emergency.
Ginny's missing.
Will you search the grounds, Your Grace?
The others look around the house.
No sign, no.
Hiram climbs out of a window onto the roof and looks around. Francis and Washington run through the garden woodland to the angel statue.
I have an idea. Come on, let's try the chapel.
The Canterville car pulls up outside the park. Mr. Umney hurries in.
We need help.
All the men hurry out of the pub and set off in different directions to search. A closed sign is put over the door. People pull up in cars and vans and hurry across the field. Francis runs out of the chapel.
That way!
The vicar walks quickly across the field. Mr. Umney watches the train leave the station. He hurries off again. Hiram walks through the house with his hands in his pockets. He stops, staring downwards. He looks up at Simon's portrait. Ginny's head appears in it and looks at him.
Hiram!
He runs to the library.
Hiram! It's the cloak she was wearing! And the stain is truly gone. Oh, God, she's with him! She's with him!
Oh, Lucy, I've been so blind. If anything's happened to her, if anything has happened to her, I'll never forgive myself.
Hiram drops to his knees. Lucille holds him and rests her head on his. Dusk falls. Francis, Hiram, and Lucille sit at the dining table. Mr. Umney stands beside them.
You've not touched your food.
We're not hungry, Mrs. Umney.
Yes, it's the same with us.
Please, we're all exhausted. Just leave it till tomorrow.
Bless you all, and good night.
She'll be in our prayers.
Mr. and Mrs. Umney walk away.
Well, there's nothing more we can do tonight. Let's turn in and get started again in the morning.
Nobody moves. The lights go out.
What's that? It's coming from the library.
Let's go.
Hiram picks up a candelabra, and the three of them hurry into the dark library. They stand and look around as lightning flashes and the candles are blown out. Adam and Washington hurry in.
What's happening?
Mom, Dad! Boys, come here!
The clock strikes midnight and the fireplace begins to open up again. Thick white mist drifts out of it.
Dad!
Ginny?
I can't find my way back!
Francis runs in.
I've got you!
Francis!
Virginia! Where are you? Ginny! This way!
Daddy, I can't see you!
Ginny, follow the boys! Virginia, follow my boys! Virginia, where are you?
I can't see you!
It's this way! Follow my voice! I'm slipping!
Lucille grabs Hiram's hand.
Dad! Where are you?
Virginia, hold my
hand! It's closing!
The gates close.
Virginia, I'm here! Virginia, take my hand!
Oh, Dad! It's closing!
Lucille and the boys hold Hiram. Francis grabs Ginny's hand.
Gotcha!
They pull Ginny into the library moments before the fireplace closes and the candles flicker back into life.
Ginny, I thought I'd lost you.
Oh, thank heaven it's all over.
Oh, Mom.
Dad.
Outside, clouds drift away from the full moon. In the library, Ginny opens the secret door.
What? A secret door?
We have to see about Sir Simon.
Carrying a candle and candelabra, they follow Ginny through the door and along the dark stone passage. Ginny protects her flame with her hand as she approaches the wooden door.
I thought it was open. Daddy, we have to get in.
Lucy, hold this.
Hiram goes up to the door and barges it with his shoulder. Francis helps him the second time. They step into the empty cell.
We have to look after his earthly body.
Ginny kneels down beside Simon's skeletal remains.
Poor Sir Simon.
An old metal neck brace is still clamped around his skeleton's neck. Ginny looks up at the raven.
We'll take care of him now, Gabriel.
Gabriel fades away. Ginny looks back down at Simon's skeleton.
Listen.
It's the chapel bell.
Ginny stands up and they all leave the cell. Outside, the chapel bell tolls under a dawn sky. Ginny and the others hurry out of the house's front door and stop to stare. tree's branches are lit up with white blossom and waving in the air.
When the silent chapel bell sounds the ghostly sinner's knell, and the Baron Alman bears.
Ginny looks tearfully at the tree.
He's been forgiven.
Everyone closes in around her, and they stand together in a tight group, looking at the illuminated almond tree. Daytime. A priest leads Simon's coffin, which is carried on the shoulders of four suited men, down an avenue of leafless trees at the back of the house. Ginny's family follows behind with Francis and the Umneys as they walk through the garden between two lines of locals. Everyone falls in behind them, led by Lord Canterville. At the statue of the winged angel, the priest nods, and Simon's coffin is lifted over the grave on ropes by the four coffin bearers. Mr. Umney salutes rigidly, and Ginny places the stone red heart on top of it.
To lie in the soft brown earth, listening to silence.
The coffin is slowly lowered.
To forgive life. To be at peace beside my Eleanor.
Ginny looks away and smiles. Gathered around the dining table.
Well, Lord Canterville, now that Sir Simon has been laid to rest, I suppose your family will want to return to the hall?
When you and your family have returned to America, perhaps. Though, actually, we have become quite fond of living in London. Why? Have you something in mind?
Well, I've spoken to the university about extending my research grant.
Oh, Dad, really?
And there are some wonderful schools.
Cool!
Lucille tells me that she loves England, so would you consider extending the lease indefinitely?
Oh, and, of course, we'd be delighted if the Umneys would consider staying on.
Oh, yeah, yes, and we'd promise to be good, wouldn't we, Adam? You bet.
I'm sure there's nothing that Mrs. Umney would enjoy more.
Of course, we would love to.
So what do you say?
Please?
I can think of nothing more fitting than you and your family remaining here for as long as you'd like. One more thing. My dear girl, you rendered my unlucky ancestor a very important service. My family and I are much indebted to you for your marvelous courage. Now, this box contains a ring that belonged to the Lady Eleanor. On behalf of the entire Canterville family, I give you our deepest thanks. You're a very extraordinary young lady.
Lord Canterville puts the ring on Ginny's finger. Ginny and Francis walk outside hand in hand. Ginny lets go and playfully runs off down the path. Francis goes after her and catches up with her. They stumble into the garden by the winged statue and stop to stare.
Francis, the garden's come back to life. It's beautiful.
They walk down the path towards the central flower bed, colored flowers and plants all around them. Ginny and Francis stand in front of the statue.
May this bring the two of you back together, as Sir Simon brought Francis and me together. And Lady Eleanor, Sir Simon made me see what life is, and what death is, and that love is stronger than both.
Ginny bends down and picks a red flower. She lays it on a stone copy of an open book with Simon and Eleanor's names either side. Simon's years of life go from 1547 to 1995.
Please forgive him.
She looks up.
Adieu. Adieu.
And you, remember me, my gentle girl.
Ginny turns to Francis and holds him. They slowly move their heads together and kiss.
Oh, Simon, read me another sonnet.
Ah, yes, my dear. With the greatest pleasure. Oh, never say that I was false of heart. Though absence seemed my flame to qualify, as easy might I from myself depart as from my soul, which in thy breast doth lie. That is my home of love.
End credits featuring Kieran Fitzgerald, Adam Otis, Raymond Pickard, Washington Otis, co-producer Patrick Stewart. U.S. casting by Lynn Kressel, U.K. casting by Simone Reynolds. Production manager Malcolm Christopher, costume designer Howard Burton, production coordinator Elaine Burt. Key makeup artist Steph Rogue, key hairstylist Stephanie Kay, gaffer David Maroney. Special effects supervisor Peter Hutchinson. Post-production supervisor Karen Maeda Varanek. Anasazi Productions, Inc., in association with Signboard Hill Productions.